Meaning is a basic human need. You know, you can turn to pretty much any psychologist, philosopher, and they'll be like, yeah, purpose and a meaning. We need those things.
Hey, everyone. Nathan Long here, president of Saybrook University. You know how this intro goes, right? If you've been listening to this for a while, it is really great to be here with all of you today. And welcome to yet another episode of Saybrook Insights. My guest today is Ms. Janelle King, current PhD student in the Creativity, Innovation, and Leadership specialization in our psychology program. Janelle has a terrific backstory. It's some really great stories. Everything from her dad being the organist at a theater in San Francisco to her time in the Marine Reserves to her work in nonprofits. It's really, really great. And you can hear from her about her professional work and interests in organizational change and transitions. She's author of several publications, including her most recent title. It's a book chapter titled Inside Job, Exploring Meaningful Work Through Creative and Spiritual Agency. It's a must read, and she'll give you a quick summary of what it's all about. All right, let's get to it with Ms. Janelle King. Ms. Janelle King, oh my goodness. We've seen each other online mostly, had the pleasure of really getting to know you a bit over the last couple of years. Real pleasure to have you here today on Saybrook Insights. Do our audience a fabulous favor. Do us the privilege of giving them a little bit of background about who you are, what you bring to this interview today. And we'll talk about Saybrook in another question, but let's focus on you pre-Saybrook. Who is Janelle King?
Oh, gosh. Eclectic is the immediate word that comes to mind. I spent time in the Marine Reserves as a heavy junk mechanic. I had a 20-plus year career in the nonprofit sector in management and executive leadership roles. I am an entrepreneur. I started a business in 2009 as a visual facilitator and strategic consultant, mostly working on organizational change projects with companies. And in 2015, one of my clients, a nationwide construction company, asked if I would create a position to join their company to help them shift their culture to one that was more open-minded, better collaborators, better listeners, etc. And so I did that for going on 7 years and just stepped away from that position last year to focus on my dissertation full-time. I'm going to add two things. I also grew up in 1970s San Francisco, which was like, hey! And I grew up inside a silent movie theater where my dad would accompany films every Friday and Saturday night on the great Wurlitzer or the mighty Wurlitzer organ.
No kidding.
Yeah, it that was a very influential part of my life for sure.
You know, it's interesting, as a former semi-professional musician, that's a gig. Anyway, I won't go into my story. It's not about me, but The exciting piece of that aspect is that's such a unique niche job, but what a great job it was in the day.
Galen.
What was his, we have to talk about your dad for a minute. Like, what was that like for him and for you? I mean,
for me, I thought he was a magician. He was a wizard. It was amazing. This was in the 70s and 80s. And he was, when he first heard of the Avenue Theater, which is where he played, he saw the organ. He was working as a cable car dispatcher for San Francisco Muni at the time. He ended up taking a part-time job at the theater as a janitor just to get close to the organ because he was a jazz musician himself. He was a jazz pianist, and he was obsessed with the organ. And so he took this janitorial job so that he could get close to it, get used to playing it, and then he started playing intermissions and the pre-show concerts every Friday and Saturday night. So this started when I was maybe like 4 or 5 years old, and it continued every single weekend for from the time I was four until I was too cool for school, basically, where we would go. And he loved it and hated it at the same time. Yeah, certain parts. He loved the community. He loved the creation, the acts of creativity that were involved, because you have to remember, at that time, there was no internet, at least not for the public. And a lot of these movies were not just floating around. You couldn't like get them from Netflix or anything. So he had this encyclopedia of silent movies, and he would, you know, they would tell him, you're going to be accompanying the general, you know, on Friday. So he would find the general in this book, and he would read, oh, it's a comedy with Buster Keaton, with, you know, the North versus the South, and, you know, this train that they call the general. And so he has this idea, and if he's lucky, he can watch the movie once before it screens. But he basically would sit at this organ and compose and deliver a complete score in real time. And that influenced my practice of standing in front of a giant piece of blank paper and facilitating a group and turning their insights into this other creation in real time. So there's been a lot.
That's like gigantic improv on a massive level, right? I mean, The General is not exactly a short movie, from what I remember. And so if it's like that, right? So 20, 30, 40 minute jaunts of film. Wow. What a cool experience. I'm sure nerve wracking for your dad at times.
I think in the beginning it was more so, but after a while they would start showing the same, you know, they have like a rotation for different films. And so the first time he'd read about it in a book, the second time he'd probably read about it to refresh himself, but then he's seen it once. And, oh, but this time now, instead of playing this, I know it's coming, so I'm going to play this instead. He had an extensive library of music in his head that he could draw from, and it was alchemy. It really was alchemy. It was amazing.
Wow. Well, we'll have to talk more offline about your dad. I'd love to hear more about that.
Love you, Dad.
Yeah, that's great. But we are here today to talk about you. And we love your dad, but we also love Janelle. So when you, you've mentioned, before we get into your Saybrook experience, which is very, I think it's been just marvelous, it sounds like, from your experiences. You mentioned two things, which I found interesting. Your experience in the Marine Reserves and your 20-year nonprofit. Now, I come into these interviews and meetings with students and I go, you know, I have a certain like, oh yeah, that tracks, that follows. I would have never, ever in a million years said Janelle King, Marine Reservist. It's awesome. And not that you couldn't do that, but tell me about that. Tell us about that. How did you land there?
So I grew up in a town in Northern California that was close to an Air Force base. And so we had all sorts of recruiters around us. In high school, I had three best friends. They were all guys, and we were all just talking about, yeah, let's go into the Marines. The three of them would go active duty. I would go as a reservist because I, you know, was going to go to college, and they would be able to support that. So I joined. I showed up. My scores were great. They were like, you can do whatever you want. And I thought, what is the most, like, paradigm busting thing I could do? I'm going to sign up to be a heavy junk mechanic. That means I would be working on cranes and, you know, built, you know, road construction material, you know, equipment and things like that. And it was very influential. I went to boot camp, and this was 3 months right in the middle of the summer at Parris Island in the Carolinas. So it was hot. And we had so many Black Flag days that they kept us all inside the barracks. Otherwise, we would, you know, have too many cases of heat stroke. And there was this one time, probably two-thirds of the way through boot camp, where one of the drill instructors was getting right up into the face of the recruit, you know, or the private standing next to me. Or actually, she was like this, and I was like this. And so it was kind of happening where I could watch it. And when a drill instructor is getting into you like that, you stay at attention. And it was really hot, and so all these flies are everywhere, and a fly lands on the private's nose. And the drill instructor continues to be ripping her, and the fly goes up the private's nose. And there is a moment where everything was quiet, and then the three of us just started cracking up. And so when your drill instructor does that, it's like, okay, that's interesting. And then she steps back and like, rah, 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 again. But that moment was like, oh, you know what? All of that, like, oh, you have to be afraid of this person, they're in charge, and you're supposed to be a certain way, that went out the window. Everything was a construct at that point. Everything was something that we agreed had value or mattered. And I became a really poor candidate for the Marines after that. It was like I had seen through the veil. So I got out of there fairly quickly. But I wish I could have continued with the mechanical side of it, just like getting in there and working on stuff. Super fun.
What a cool story, though. I mean, that frames your total life experience, I mean, at the end of the day. So, and the story about the fly, it's right up there with Mike Pence and the fly on his head during the debate. So
I was wondering if it was the same fly, even though probably fly ancestor, but that was... Yeah.
Plaguing people all over the country, right?
Yes.
So then you mentioned that you had a 20-year career in nonprofit, which is formidable. As someone who leads a nonprofit, private, and have been doing so for now 14 years in two different places, it's a lovely, wonderful experience. And it's also just, you know, it's constant. And I always admire people I meet who work in community-based nonprofits, because it is a wholly different animal, right? I mean, you're having to fundraise to survive, essentially, and get grants. Tell us a little bit about that. What were some of the highlights and the challenges of that experience? And maybe how did that frame your current frame of mind?
I got my bachelor's degree from San Diego State, go Aztecs, in psychology. And I wanted to go into social work and get my master's in social work after that. And I thought, well, if you're going to do that, maybe you should get a job in a nonprofit that kind of fits in that area. So I got a receptionist position at the Arc of San Diego, which is a nonprofit that provides services to people with developmental disabilities throughout the county. And I, you know, found my way in. I quickly got promoted to managing the department. And I started at the Master's of Social Work program in San Diego State. I didn't make it a semester in that program, because I found this experience of instructors they were painting a picture of what the nonprofit sector was like and what social work was like while I was working in an organization, and what they would say and what I would experience on a daily basis was like, that doesn't quite work. So maybe I'm not meant to be a social worker. And I continued in the nonprofit sector because I loved the organization. I loved the people. I loved the clients that we were serving. And one of the things that I noticed during my tenure there was that our frontline staff, the people who worked in the group homes, the people who provided independent living services or other services, they gave 1,000% of themselves to taking care and making sure that, you know, our clients were well cared for, loved, supported as people, as individuals. And they were making less money than someone working at McDonald's. And that really got to me. And it got me thinking about they've got these clients' backs for anything and everything. Who's got theirs? I think it's going to be me.
Yes. Yeah.
It's going to be me. I'm going to make darn sure that everyone is taken care of in that space. I ended up staying at that organization for 13 years. I ended up getting my master's in nonprofit management as a result of that. It had a lot of influence over how I started to see the world and what I could expect from myself to contribute to that space.
That's very good.
Yeah. And so from the social work sector, I moved into an executive role at an international conservation organization where we protected and saved sea turtles, which was amazing because they were in Japan, they were in Mexico. So I was traveling to Mexico and really stretching out of my comfort zone. And that was magical. But then we got absorbed. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Before you go on, how do you end up in San Diego and then moving into a nonprofit that's doing work to save sea turtles? Like, where's the bridge there?
Well, at the end of my time at the ARC, I had gone after a higher leadership position that had opened up. And I went after it. Another person in the organization, we were really close friends. She went after it as well. We were both like, whoever gets this is going to be great. And the person doing the hiring ended up hiring someone outside of the organization. And so that kind of, I understand why, you know, when you have two internal candidates, you probably want to not put either of them in a weird position. But it kind of prompted me to think like, okay, well, if I'm going to grow, because I had been managing the department for basically all of that time, if I'm going to grow, I need to create that opportunity for myself. So I started looking at positions, and a director of finance and operations position came available for an organization that did that work. And I applied and was hired, and I think a week later was in Mexico. So,
well, and I think it just sort of, it exemplifies the point, right? That mm-hmm. we need to be open to those experiences and opportunities. Sometimes I think we go, that's not going to be in my wheelhouse. But what I've appreciated about getting to know you, Janelle, is you sort of open yourself up to the world. When we had the conversation about you considering leaving your job and pursuing your dissertation and what all that entailed, it is brave. It also takes a lot of, you know, forethought and thinking, and it also takes a lot of openness, right, to be willing to take what comes, right, and allow the fates to work their magic, if you will. So you saved a lot of sea turtles, I'm sure, with your colleagues, and that
we hope so,
which is important.
So
you transitioned out of that, went into this really interesting job with the construction group because they saw all the great things that you possibly could do, especially in the space of kind of shifting organizational thinking and mindsets. Before we get into sort of all the details around your Saybrook experience, I would like to understand what drove your passion around the organizational change idea, right? Like what was exciting about that to you? Or maybe what did you see that you went, we need to rethink this?
Right. Dr. Long, you have nonprofit experience. After 20 years of working with dysfunctional teams and dysfunctional organizations, I thought I could bring something that could be helpful. And when I started my business after leaving Pro Peninsula, I really got to see that, I have like this weird thing that's happening where I'm working in this very unexpected way for traditional corporations or the army or, you know, hospitals or whatever. But it's getting really good results. Like, you know, when I started working with the construction company, they were bringing me in to help them work better together and win multi-million dollar construction pursuits. And throughout the year, I had a 100% hit rate with the teams that I worked with. Every team I worked with won the project. And then when they reached out, they were like, hey, we want you to think about joining the family. I was like, well, you know, if you want to hire my business, you can keep doing that. But if there's something else going on, please talk to me about it. And they were like, yeah, actually there is. When the Great Recession happened in 2008, 2009, we thought we were going to be fine and we ended up losing business. And so we hired consultants, they did 360s, they talked to all the people. And basically it turned out that given the choice between working with a really skilled construction group, who's kind of a pain to work with, versus working with a adequately skilled construction group who is great to work with, the client was going to choose the one who's great to work with. So can you help us be better to work with? You'd shift the culture, you know, work with teams, help them cultivate soft skills. I mean, that's not their words, but this is what we were really getting at. Help them become better collaborators, help them be more open to possibility. And, you know, you bring all this creative stuff to what you do. There was something about this journey that got me passionate about changing organizations, actually having that transformation stick, because we've seen a lot of, oh, we changed and now we're changing right back. I wanted to transform and not change. I was doing it through creativity. And later I realized actually it was this creative spiritual agency thing that I draw upon that's really helping me to do this. And so for the organizational work, I'm thinking about it in terms of creativity at work in the world, right? It's how do, you know, for a transformation thing, it's leveraging our creativity, leveraging the things that bring us purpose and meaning to have an impact in a traditional space through non-traditional means to make lasting change. That isn't just good for the company, but it's good for the community in which it is, the employees, you know, so that they aren't doing, as Studs Terkel would talk about, a Monday through Friday sort of dying when they went to work. You know, I want people to be able to actualize, transcend, transform. And so that's where my path has been taking me. And it turns out, you know, it seems random, but when you turn around and look, everything lines up. Of course, of course, all these things happen to get me exactly where I am. So now I just think that the path I'm born to tread is imprinted on the soles of my feet.
That's a great way to put it.
Wherever I step, that's where I'm supposed to be.
Well, you mentioned one of my favorite authors. So, another point there. Thank you so much for it's a great book, by the way, that you just quoted from. So you do have a book on this topic. Let's talk a little bit about that topic. It's coming out shortly, right?
It's a book chapter, and it is, it's part of an edited collection, and it's a Palgrave Macmillan publication. Yay! And it just, it exists.
Wonderful.
It exists in digital print and actual print.
So if you could say, what's the main thesis and one takeaway that you would, if no one had a chance to read the chapter, how would you kind of describe it?
So the chapter is, I'm not going to get it right, but it's Inside Job, an emerging framework for meaningful work through creative spiritual agency. And the premise is meaning is a basic human need. You know, you can turn to pretty much any psychologist, philosopher, and they'll be like, yeah, purpose and a meaning. We need those things.
Yeah.
And when we come to work, a lot of the time, we're not able to experience that for ourselves. And our work feels kind of meaningless or mundane or rote. But because it's a fundamental human need, when we're faced with meaningless work, we actually perceive it as an existential threat to our self-identity. So, and then you look today and there's all the mental health and wellness issues in the workplaces. So what can we do to shift this? What can we do to help empower individuals to bring the purpose and meaning to their work? And I looked at that creative spiritual agency thing that I was noticing in myself and thought, well, okay, what if I develop this and kind of map it onto the commonly studied pathways to meaningful work? and it mapped really nicely. And so by leaning into your belief that you can act or influence a thing, you're willing to approach the familiar in unfamiliar ways, and you are committed to that search for purpose and meaning, regardless of orientation to a divine referent, that becomes a little synergistic engine that drives your actions moving forward and actually puts a little juice behind whether you want to have meaningful work that is in service to others and you're creating community, or you're communing with others and it's more of a unity piece, whether you are growing and self-actualizing or you becoming better acquainted with yourself. You know, these four different areas that we can find meaning in our work. So it's been really an honor to have been asked to contribute that chapter.
Yeah.
And I earlier today was playing with the construct and evolving it even more, digging even further into it. And this isn't even directly what my dissertation research is about. So it's interesting. I have these two plates that want to spin at the same time.
Oh, that's great. Well, congratulations on that. And I think, you know, for those of you interested, I think it comes out in this later this fall, early spring. Is that right? The full volume?
No, the book itself is already available.
It is out.
And,
okay, fully.
Yeah. And I should probably remember what it's called, but I don't right now. Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
That's all right. We'll get you on the we'll get the information out there so we can find it. We'll put the information in the show notes.
Perfect.
So that you all can find that later on. Last question that I have officially in this, and then we have a couple more follow-ups, Janelle. So you made your way to Saybrook University and this specialization called Creativity Studies and now Creativity Innovation and Leadership.
Yes.
How did you find it? What drew you to it? And what are you going to do with it? It sounds like you're already doing stuff with it.
Yeah, I am definitely doing some stuff with it right now. What drew me to it? I wanted to be a psychologist for a really long time. And over the course of my life, when I needed to get away, I would go to a place called the Esalen Institute.
Saybrook's home, our spiritual home.
Saybrook's home. We have many, many founders who would do things there. And when I got serious about, okay, so the reason why I got serious about my PhD, I was working on my master's and I was calling another library for a resource and they put me on hold, came back on the phone and they said, okay, Dr. King, we found it. And I was like, ooh, I like how that sounds. Gonna have to do it. But if I'm gonna do it, I needed to be at the right place. And so can I find a university that was basically Esalen as a university with the same humanistic values, with the same purpose and meaning, the dedication to crafting experiences of learning instead of here's your stuff, we're going to have a quiz. And I had a client in my business who I remembered had been going to Saybrook. Shout out Leslie Solomon. What?
Oh, Leslie. Yes, of course.
Yeah. So Leslie was a client of mine. And so I wrote her after a while. I was like, hey, didn't you go to this place called Saybrook? What, you know, you seem to really like it. What can you tell me about it? I'm thinking about it for their business program. And Leslie, wrote back and she's like, you will love it. Do not go into the business program. I have worked with you. I see what you do. I see how creative you are. You need to look at creativity studies. I didn't even know you guys had a program. And so I met with Terry Goslin Jones. I, went to St. Louis for my work and scheduled, like an hour and a half lunch where I was talking to her about the program. I really was kind of interviewing her. And after, talking with Terry and doing more research into the school, I was like, yeah, no, this is what I was looking for. Absolutely.
So what has your experience been like through the program? It kind of broad strokes. You can't clearly capture all the stuff, but if you had to describe it to someone who's considering Saybrook, especially creativity, right? Because that's your area. What's your experience been like generally? What the hallmarks, the positives, and maybe a couple of the challenges too?
So hallmarks and positives. I am so grateful that Saybrook allows me to pursue the things I want to pursue in my research and in my studies. I can't tell you how many other doctoral students I've talked to where I'm like, I'm studying the experience of living a calling in organizational change, and I'm doing this heuristic inquiry method. And people will look at me and they're like, your chair is letting you do that? My chair told me what I had to study or what I had to research and the method I had to use. So there is a, you know, the valuing of us as individuals really comes through, and the support of us as individuals bringing our gifts into the world. That is a huge part of my experience. And that started day one, before day one, when Terry was willing to speak with me. The courses have been fun. I worked full time and went to school full time for most of my academic career. Again, I just stepped away for the fall semester last year. And it was a bit of a challenge finding my optimal balance, knowing what I was capable of. And I have a tendency to be like, I can do more. So the first semester, I signed up for 2 classes and worked full time. The next semester, I signed up for 3 classes, worked full time, and was like, oh, yeah, no, I think I'm going to, you know, find that sweet spot where it really is 2. And once I found that, the coursework became just something that was almost like you're just kind of running your race, and you've like hit that really comfortable stride. You know, the way that the courses are structured, the information is shared in way, you know, different ways so that it really makes sense. The conversations are lively, thought-provoking, a little challenging at times. And once it was hard at first, but once you get used to it, it really started to click. And the biggest thing has been the whole dissertation experience, which is what the PhD has been leading up to all this time. It took a long time for me to really get clear on what I wanted to research. I came into Saybrook thinking, oh, I'm going to research innovation because that's, you know, and collaboration because that's what I do. So that's probably what I should research. And working with the faculty and just having conversations for years helped me get really crystal clear where it clicks in your gut and you're like, this is what I'm going to do. And when it happens and you share it with the staff and they're like, great, do it. How can we help? How can we support you with this? It's something really powerful.
Oh, that's great.
I don't know what else to say.
No. I mean, I think you really captured what you and I have talked about over the years. That really encapsulated, I think, summarize what you have said to me. And I think that that's just such a beautiful testament to the work that Dr. Jones, Goslin Jones, has done, along with her predecessors, Steve Pritzker, Ruth Richards, along with now Dr. Cleave and,
yes,
and your whole cohort and cadre. Yeah, it's terrific.
I have to give massive props to Dr. Robert Cleave. I mean, his vision for what the creativity, innovation, and leadership specialization could be, both within the university, within the field, and for the world, is powerful, powerful.
Good stuff.
I'm loving it.
Well, with that, soon to be Dr. King, we are looking forward to saying that in another few months, hopefully.
Boom.
I have 2 remaining questions we ask of all our guests. And they're short and sweet, so it has to be the first thing that comes to mind. Don't dwell too long, because you're going to pull from all that internal experience that's right up here, so you know it. So just roll with it. So the first question is, what does the term humanistic mean to you?
Person-centered, mutual regard.
Bam. All right. Straight out of the Janelle King textbook. That was beautiful. Thank you for that. The last question, and I think it's particularly apt as we are looking at a mental health crisis, a lot of division in our country and around the globe. What 3 things can an individual or a group or a community, however you want to frame it, what 3 things can someone or some group do to either advance positive social change or engage in good mental and physical well-being. So you can choose.
That's a lot to play with. The thing that immediately came to mind was stand up and speak out for the social change piece, the transformative piece. There is a tremendous power waiting inside of you to act on it, you know, to allow it out so that you and it can do amazing things. And it's really easy to be like, oh, but I'm, you know, let me close it off for fill in the blank reasons. Just let it out, you know, even just a little bit. Find the ways that get you comfortable taking a little bit of a risk, and then take a little bit more of a risk and open a little bit more. As far as self-care and mental health, well, you know, mental health goes, I watch cheesy movies a lot. So I would recommend do something that makes you laugh uncontrollably. It is a great release and a great mood lifter. And it also helps me take myself a little less seriously. And the other thing would be, hug someone you love.
Yes.
You know, if you're feeling stressed, whatever, you feel yourself like getting wrapped up in the thing, you know what the thing is. Like, just stop, take a breath, go find someone that means something to you. Give them a hug.
Yeah.
Pet your cat. Yeah. Spend a couple of moments. Reconnect, you know, to the things that matter to you so that you can go back and give from your saucer instead of your cup, as someone used to say.
Thank you so much. What a fabulous interview today. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for what you've brought to Saybrook University. It was a joy to have you here today, Janelle. Thank you so much.
I am honored. Thank you.
Where can folks find you on the web?
I'm on LinkedIn a lot. So I am, you know, Janelle King at LinkedIn, JeanNnelKing. I also have a website, which I'm not at as often because I'm working on a dissertation or something. And that's JanelleKing.com.
Great. You can find Janelle online. You can find her right here at Saybrook University. Reach out to her about all your creativity, innovation, and leadership questions. And or organizational leadership design, or even the Marine Reserves or the Wurlitzer Oregon. She's got a whole wealth of experiences. Janelle, thank you so much.
Dr. Lang, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
I want to thank Janelle again. She was fabulous. Love that laugh. Love the energy. Love her commitment to the work and all the great things she's doing. I hope you enjoyed her as much as I did. Remember the three major takeaways from Janelle. Stand up and speak out for social change. That's right in line with our mission. And for social well-being, personal well-being, she likes to do cheesy movies or whatever to get stronger emotionally, to just unplug, to maybe not take herself so seriously. Whatever it is, find that thing that you can lean into in maybe more difficult times. And in those times, hug someone you love, and maybe not even just in rough times, but in good times too. So those are her three major takeaways. If you want to see the YouTube version, please visit our Saybrook YouTube page. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go to Apple iTunes and leave that 5-star rating and review and subscribe so you can get episodes as they come out. You know the drill too. If you're on Spotify, same deal, and make sure to follow us. You can, of course, subscribe to us on most major podcast platforms, including Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Pandora, and many others. Remember to check our show notes for information on today's guests, including links to the websites that they have, books, etc. For more about our university, go to saybrook.edu, click on Areas of Study at the top of the page, and locate the program of your choice to learn more. In Janelle's case, it's Creativity, Innovation, and Leadership. Or simply Google Saybrook University. That's it for today, everyone. Thank you so, so much for your dedicated listenership or viewership, as the case may be, for your commitment to the work we're doing here at Saybrook University. And I look forward to seeing you or hearing you or being with you next time. Take care.